This presentation has been previously broadcast.
The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
It's against the law to commit suicide around here.
Yeah, it's against the law where I come from, too.
Where do you come from?
Heaven.
What'd you say just a minute ago? Why'd you want to save me?
Was it too much to have them work and pay and live and die in a couple of decent rooms and a bath? Anyway, my father didn't think so. This town needs this measly one-horse institution, if only to have some place where people can come without crawling to Potter. I'm leaving right now. I'm going to school. This is my last chance.
But they'll vote with Potter otherwise.
You realize what this means? It means bankruptcy and scandal and prison. That's what it means. I'm worth more dead than alive.
Why don't you go to the riffraff you love so much and ask them?
I suppose it'd been better if I'd never been born at all.
All right, you've got your wish. You've never been born. You've been given a great gift, George. The chance to see what the world would be like without you.
Live again. Please, God, let me live again.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, you may recognize that story. It is a Christmas classic, and my next guest might be able to correct me. I think today, this year, is the 50th anniversary of the making of that movie. Of course, It's a Wonderful Life. That was kind of a montage from it. George Bailey making the small sacrifices day in and day out for his family and his community. Then hard times fall on him, and he succumbs to despair. And it's really such a powerful story that just resonates with the human story, with you, with me, right? It's easy for us to despair. It's easy for us to allow anxiety and the trials of the world to overcome us. And that's why I love the Divine Mercy message so much. You know, it's all about trust. It's all about knowing God is in control. Of course, George is given the gift to view life through new eyes. And it's such a great story. If you never saw A Wonderful Life, strongly recommend it. My crack team here at Relevant Radio, and Patrick Alog, who I love when he's all by phones, says it's 76 years since the making of that movie. I thought somebody told me it was 50 walking into the studio. I said, really? That's all? But no, 76 years. So it's a classic. It's been around a long, long time. In A Wonderful Life, Jimmy Stewart, this movie just propelled him to big time in Hollywood. And it's a story that has warmed people's hearts with a message of really our inherent value, right? Over and over again, ever since this thing is out, audiences across the generations have had their heartstrings tugged, you know, have had their eyes opened. It has some bad theology in it. I always say that, you know, especially regarding angels. You do not become an angel when you die. A lot of people say, oh, you might, when I die, I want to be an angel, or my child died, it's my angel. No, that's not how that theology works. But I'm joined today by somebody who has turned me on to some great movies, who knows this story intimately, and who actually has another movie that you may never have heard of. Maybe you've seen it. That he says it's overlooked, but it is a must-see Christmas movie. I'm joined today by Kevin Turley, and a very, very gifted filmmaker and writer and journalist and regular contributor here. He's a podcaster. I've never been on a tour with him, but I understand he's a tour guide. So he would be great, but he's a film and book reviewer, and his knowledge is deep. It's good to have him back with us again. Hey, Kevin, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew, and it's good to be back with you.
So where do you guide? Is it over in Britain? Is that where, if I come over, I'm going to look you up?
Well, I've been known to guide people around secret London, Catholic London, sort of the all the places that you don't get mentioned on the map. So where martyrs died, where they were holed up, where they were executed, where they lived, perhaps, that sort of thing. I've done that, especially for Americans, and tried to do perhaps what you do on your tours, Drew, as well, which is to make people see London through different eyes, that they see with eyes of faith, that the the spirit of the martyrs, the spirit of the saints, the very deep roots of Catholic London are still here if you've eyes to see them.
You know, it's so true. The suffering of the faithful over there. I was in Ireland not too long ago, as you know. Boy, Catholics in Ireland have suffered, but Catholics in England have suffered. And I would love, you know, I was saying to my wife, we really should go to, I've been to 50 countries around the world. I've never been to London. So it's like, I've never been there. I would love to come over, Kevin, and get together and have a journey like that. I'm sure others would as well. So we'll have to do that at some point in time.
You have an open invitation, Drew. We've got a spare room even. So
well, let me do this for you. Do you run tours? I'll put up a quick plug. I'm sure there's a lot of people saying, I would love to have that. No?
Okay. No, I do them privately for
good.
Friends.
All right, and, good.
No.
I don't want to inundate you, so that's good. I'll be selfish. I'll keep it for me and my wife and maybe some friends. I love it. Hey, let's talk A Wonderful Life. I know you've got a new movie to watch, too, as well. You know, today I want to talk great movies and classics, and a little bit later, Peter Atkinson's going to be stopping by. He's going to talk about some really bad movies as well. But what is it about this movie? We played some of it. I think so many people today, I had a woman call me during the chaplet the other day who wants to go to Christmas Mass, but she's crippled with anxiety. We pray the chaplet, you hear the despair in so many people's lives as they're overcome. This is a story that really reflects, you know, a continual human problem that all of us face, the challenges of life, hardship, and how we must rise above that despair. What is it about the story? Is it the fact that there is always a new beginning? What is it about the story that makes it resonate for decade after decade with so many people?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head at the start, Drew, because you mentioned the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and that's what you're about during that portion of your show. And the final prayer that you pray with us every night is about avoiding or overcoming despair and despondency, right?
Yeah, amen.
That we'll not be overcome by that. And I think what this movie is in some ways all about despair and despondency. And you see, that's the entry point for most of us, okay? Because Christmas is a time in the United States, here in England too, it's exactly the same, where we are fed a line by advertisers, which is, if you buy this, if you eat this, if you drink this, etc., etc., you will be happy. You will join those masses of people singing around the piano with the roaring fire, and everybody's happy, and that's the true spirit of Christmas. When we all know that this is just an advertiser's way of doing what advertisers do best, which is to make us feel inadequate. And therefore, we have to buy something or purchase something or achieve something to become better, to become adequate even. And the great thing about It's a Wonderful Life is it turns that on its head. And we start off with Christmas Eve, when everybody should be having a wonderful time. And we've got George Bailey, played beautifully by James Stewart, through the snow on his way to kill himself, to commit suicide. So you couldn't have a more bleak beginning to a film which is about Christmas, right? And that's the entry point for most of us, I think, that the sense that at some point in our lives, regardless of who you are and regardless of how religious you are, that's the other great pretense, that Catholics or good religious people do not get despair and despondency. Well, just speak to Mother Teresa. Not that she was in despair, but she knew that sort of spiritual dryness for years and years and years. So there's something very real about this film. And then the other thing which this film really kind of hones in on is whether our lives matter. Whether, Drew, that in 50 years anybody will ever remember the Drew Mariani Show. You know, I'm sure they will. But it's that idea of, do our lives matter? Do they really add up? And the little voice that whispers in one of our ears, which has a tail, tells us that it doesn't matter, that you don't matter. And therefore, the logical conclusion is that George Bailey draws is not only that his life doesn't matter, but it's somehow causing pain for other people, and therefore he should end it. That's the satanic logical conclusion to all of this. Whereas, you're absolutely right, the angel arrives in the shape of Clarence, and leaving aside the dodgy theology, you're absolutely right, it's off the wall. But there's an essence that the truth comes out through Clarence, or is mediated through Clarence, i.e. is mediated through supernatural means, however ridiculous. And maybe they had to be ridiculous to be palatable. to an audience, because if the film had become kind of preachy, kind of Sunday sermon, people would have switched off. But the film doesn't. It's just enough sort of whimsy to make you think that, well, this is okay. So people start to listen to Clarence, and then Clarence gives George, as your bumper at the start was saying, his wish, which is to see the world without him. And boy, it's a pitiful sight, not for George, but for the people around him. And that's the other thing, that in the persona of George Bailey, we learn that our lives are not just important to us, but they're important to other people as well. And that's the true secret of happiness, not about self-importance, but being important to other people. And, you know, that in essence is why I think this film is so popular. There are those two strands sort of the play out throughout it, and are beautifully done by Frank Capra in the only way he could.
Yeah. You know, I remember, I think it was last year, maybe it was the year before, I read a piece that you wrote on A Wonderful Life, and something you found struck me, and it was the fact that this classic movie that is so loved, and it's still rerunning today, it was a box office flop. What happened? What was it that this movie did not resonate at the time, or why wasn't it successful?
It's a really good question, Drew. I think, I mean, this is just my opinion. Yeah. Obviously, I wasn't around in 1946, but I think it didn't chime with the then world post-war, immediately post-war. Remember, it's 1946. True. So within 12 months of before Wonderful Life, there was atom bombs being dropped, there was concentration camps being opened, horrors on a scale that modern man had never seen. So it didn't chime with the kind of prevailing mood. But also, if you look at films on both sides of the Atlantic, both in Europe and the United States, from about 1945 through to the early 50s, they are very, very dark. Mm. There's a lot of dark themes. You could almost say there's a lot of nihilism in these films, because people had come back from war. They had seen too much, they had heard too much, and they had also started to see the certainties of life, be they political, social, or even religious. They started to question them, or started to reject them. So you start to see a different world beginning to emerge post-war, which is uncertain and is much more problematic, perhaps, than the pre-war years in some ways. And I think that that played into this. And I don't think that the audience, just imagine standing outside a movie theater, Main Street America, 1946 on a Saturday night, and you can go to any amount of films. And there's a film called It's a Wonderful Life, and you've just come back from the Pacific or somewhere. You know, you're going to say, no thanks. Give me something which is speaking to the darkness that I have experienced. Yeah. So I think that's why it didn't resonate at the time. It was a box office flop, remember?
Yeah. That's amazing. It really is. Well, let's do this. We'll take a few calls for you, too. If you want to get in, share your views, maybe ask your questions, the number's 888-914-9149. I also want to talk about some other movies that might be flying under the radar. I know you were going to talk a little bit about Meet John Doe. I've never heard of it, so I want to hear about it. But before we do, Joe, who's listening to us in Passaic, New Jersey, has got a movie recommendation, and this is one with Mickey Rourke, who dies and goes to heaven. Hey, Joe, good afternoon. You're on the air with Kevin Turley. Good afternoon.
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. God bless you guys.
Thanks.
It was Mickey Rooney, sir. It was
Mickey Rooney, I should
say. It Came Upon a Midnight Clear. He's a New York City detective. He retires and goes to California to live with his family in his old age. He always promised his grandson that he would take him to New York City to experience a New York City Christmas. While he's hanging the lights on the tree in Los Angeles, he dies of a heart attack and he goes to heaven. Heaven has a problem that there's an angel, similar to Clarence from the other movie. He's gone missing. Mm-hmm. So they decide to let Mickey Rooney come back, go to New York City, and find the angel.
Cool.
That's the plot of the story.
Well, good.
Really, yeah. That's what it's called. Came of Midnight.
I love it, Joe. Thanks. I've never heard of that either. I don't want to give away the way the story ends. You did a great job setting it up. Are you familiar with It Came Upon a Midnight Clear? You know, with Mickey Rooney. I said Rourke, but Mickey Rooney is what I meant to say. That'd be interesting. Mickey Rourke in there. Nine and a half weeks.
I was going to say, well, you say that, but Mickey Rourke recently appeared in a film, Man of God, which I don't know if you had on your show. Yeah, and he does appear with somebody who experiences heaven in that film. So it's interesting that Joe brought up a different Mickey Rooney. No, I don't know that film. But it sounds interesting, I must admit.
Hey, tell me a little bit also about John Doe. Then here's another one that I may, you say is a must see. It's flown under the radar. It's got some big names in it. Tell us about John Doe.
Well, if you it's one of those parlor games, Drew, where you can sit and people will talk about their favorite Christmas film, and they talk about It's a Wonderful Life, and it's Frank Capra and all the rest of them. And I say, but yes, but what about Frank Capra's other Christmas film? And everybody goes quiet and they think it's a joke. What do you mean, other Christmas film? Well, Meet John Doe is also very much set at Christmas and has a climax very much on Christmas Eve. In some ways, it's even darker than It's a Wonderful Life. But before we get to that, Drew, on the positive side, it has Gary Cooper and Barbara Stanwyck in it. Barbara Stanwyck is amazing in this film. I mean, she appeared in, she liked Capra, he liked her. She's absolutely incredible. What people don't realize is that Barbara Stanwyck became a Catholic shortly before Meet John Doe. Now, she had a sort of rather difficult private life in it, maybe. But anyway, that's by the by. Gary Cooper plays John Doe, a John Doe figure, because Stanwyck is playing a sassy, very sassy young journalist who needs to keep her job. So she creates this sort of figure who's going to commit suicide on Christmas Eve as a protest against all the world's ills, right? Anyway, the story sort of unravels in different ways, and it involves fake news. It involves people using media manipulation to create political movements to try and gain power. It also has at its center an everyman who is unwittingly caught up in this by virtue of succumbing to the initial lie, the initial fabrication. But there's all sorts of wonderful Capra-esque elements within it. But the thing is this, Drew, that it's also a film which you could almost say is Catholic social teaching on screen. Wow. So if you take the initial and the essential elements of Catholic social teaching, human dignity, subsidiarity, solidarity in the common good, charity, social justice, sanctity of human life, the dignity of each human person, and the call of families and communities to participate in the pursuit of the common good, all of that is in Meet John Doe. But the beauty of Capra, as in It's a Wonderful Life, is he's able to, if you like, secrete these elements within the film. They're there. They're part of his mental, personal makeup. And you see them played out in the film. And it's a wonderful film for today. Why? Because, again, suicide is seen as an option. Suicide is seen as a resort for people to go to. It's also a film about the big business and big tech of its time, i.e. newspapers and media, manipulating people and manipulating the political discourse. And it's also about how small the little people can be manipulated by the larger corporations, the larger people running those, and how, in the end, what triumphs against such things, fake news and manipulation and big business and tyranny of one sort or another, is not a strong army, is not force, but is love and the truth.
I love it. Sounds great. I'll have to check that out. Thank you for putting that forward. Let's grab a few calls for you as well, as we only have a few moments left. Nick is listening in Chicago. Nick, good afternoon.
Hi, it's not Saint Nick, but Nick all the same. I just wanted to say that It's a Wonderful Life, great movie, and I'm sure Mr. Turley knows that it's based on real occurrences in Seneca Falls, New York, the home of the women's suffrage movement. Capra used to come to visit his family, and he would have his hair cut in Seneca Falls. It was like less than halfway to his family's house for and there was a young mentally ill woman that on Christmas Eve jumped off a bridge into the Barge Canal there trying to drown herself, and a young Italian immigrant jumped in to save her. He saved her, but he later died of pneumonia as a result of the exposure that he got. And Potter was based after Samuel Gould, the guy who owned Gould Pumps, and he owned the Gould Hotel, and he owned basically, you know, three-quarters of the town. And my understanding was that he was not a very kind man. But very interesting how these producers and writers and directors can take real-life circumstances, turn them around a little bit, and put a nice twist on it. But that movie is my absolute favorite Christmas movie. It's my favorite movie other than the one that, what's his name, did with Jesus being crucified in Aramaic. I forgot the name.
Gibson, Mel Gibson, Passion of the Christ.
Yeah. Passion of Christ, yeah.
Well, that's fantastic. Yeah. Well, Nick, you seem like you know your stuff. I love that. Kevin, I'll let you respond.
Yeah, I mean, I think, yes, I've heard about Seneca Falls and the links with Capra. I think the original story was The Greatest Gift, though, that it was based on, which may have been, again, an extension of the events of Seneca Falls. I mean, the only thing I'll say, Nick, is that if you delve deep enough, most films are autobiographical, either about directors or filmmakers or the stars of them, you know? I mean, it's a very interesting seam to dig into.
All right, well, Nick, thank you very much. Go ahead, Nick, final thoughts.
If anybody goes through Seneca Falls, they do have a little museum on Main Street that's got all this stuff about It's a Wonderful Life, including photos and things from the movie.
That sounds awesome. I'll have to check it out. Hey, thank you very, very much for your call. Well, in a couple minutes, my guest today, Kevin Turley, taking a look at some Christmas classic movies. Kevin put a new one on my radar today, but let's go to New Jersey next. Andrea is listening to us there. Andrea or Andrea, I never know. You are on the air with Kevin. Good afternoon.
Hello. Hey, Kevin. Hey, Drew. Thanks for taking my call.
Got it.
So I love this movie, and every Christmas I watch it. And I asked last year my 31-year-old son to watch it. And I said, Patrick, you know what's going on here? George Bailey, when he's gone, like, look at how the world turns so horrible. And I said, this may be simplistic, but as children are aborted and they're not here in the world, like, no wonder our world is so messed up. So I try to, like, talk to my cousins and friends and say, so you love that movie. Look what happened. You know, Pottersville came and all these people were saddened. So can you relate that to the children that were never born that could have changed the world?
It's such a great point because, Kevin, I think when we talked about this last year, you drew the parallel to this film and the culture of death and what we're seeing. So I'll let you take it from there.
Yes, Andrea, I couldn't agree more with you. I mean, this film disappeared really from view in the 1940s, and it came back into the public consciousness in 1974, just after Roe versus Wade. And it came back by total accident, by a total fluke. A clerical error meant it went into the public domain. So it started getting shown on television. It didn't have to pay royalties, so television companies love showing it at Christmas. And they did throughout the 70s and 80s. And in the article that Drew's alluding to, I made exactly the same point, that it was a constant reminder that every single life is precious. And as you said, since 1973, how many George Baileys have we lost, has the world lost, that could have made such a great difference to people's lives? The only thing I will say, Drew, I was thinking about our conversation this time last year, and it was in light of the fact that Roe versus Wade was still in place. And here we are talking this year, 12 months on, and it's gone.
Yep, that's so true. That
the Potter has gone. The Potter's field has been kicked out.
That's so true. Well, Kevin, look, I'm up against God. I got to leave it there. But I'm so grateful for your writing. Keep doing it. Keep putting on our radar those great films that we have to see. And I look forward to having you back here very soon. My warmest wishes and prayers to your wife and to you. I hope you have a great Advent and more than anything else, a joyful Christmas.
Thank you very much, Drew, and the same to you.
God bless you. That's Kevin Turley. Check out not only It's a Wonderful Life, you haven't seen it yet, but his, well, it's the pick that I've yet to see, Meet John Doe. All right, and follow Kevin Turley. You can follow him online. You can follow him at the National Catholic Register. Just great writing. When we come back, let's change gears a little bit. We'll have some fun here, too. You know, Hallmark movies can be kind of addicting. I don't know if you've ever watched them. You know, real men don't admit that they watch Hallmark movies, do they? I don't know. You start watching. I saw one last year, right? about some radio broadcaster who falls in love, and his co-host was a morning show girl, and they had this back and forth, and I got sucked into that thing. I watched the whole thing. I thought it was great. You know, it's like, they're feel-good shows, right? They're fun. They're fun. Peter Atkinson's going to join me when we return from the Merry Beggars. We'll take a look at some of the, maybe the worst Hallmark movies. We'll take a look at that and more, okay? We'd love to hear from you as well. The number, if you want to get in, 888-914-9149. Our conversation continues right after this.
A look at Christmas you won't get anywhere else. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Hey, the University of Mary, our sponsor, has a Christmas gift for you. But you're going to have to wait for the Three Kings to arrive to hear about the special opportunity, a tuition-free nursing academy, with applications closing January 31st.
The Drew Mariani Show is on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, a little Christmas music for you. We are in that season. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. It is. Isn't it? I love this season. I don't know where you're living right now. I know the Midwest is bracing for a blizzard. You're going to have a white Christmas. I spoke to my sister who's in North Carolina. They're going to get some rain, but she was hoping for some snow. Occasionally it snows there. Even Texas, right? I hope you have a great Christmas. I hope you're enjoying the season. This is a wonderful time of year where, you know, you kick back and you see some of your favorite Christmas classics, right? From Elf to Home Alone to It's a Wonderful Life. With Christmas less than a week away, millions of Americans are going to be hunkering down. And I know you're going to have an opportunity to see these. We just talked about It's a Wonderful Life. That's something my former producer, Jake, he said I'd watch it every single year. He just loved it. You've got A Miracle on 34th Street, right? And you got those, you know, Christmas classics that some people grew up with, like National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. One of my colleagues here who works on the Patrick Madrid show loves that. So it goes on and on and on. But there are different areas of the region where certain movies are loved in greater capacity. But there's another genre of movies that I want to talk about today. And they're Hallmark movies. And I was sharing a story about how I got sucked into one last year about a radio talk show host who met his future wife in love, and, you know, the back and forth, and I'm watching, I'm like, no, he does love you. Don't leave him, right? It's like, and how they come together in the end. These movies always end in such a tear-jerking, happy way, right? I mean, they're a little bit sappy, you know what's coming, but I think they're not so bad. I don't know if you watch them or if you've ever seen them. Maybe you don't even know what a Hallmark movie is. That's why I brought in Peter Atkinson. He hails from the Merry Beggars, and he's been with us many, many times, kind of our entertainment expert here at Relevant Radio, heads up our media entertainment division here, and we were just talking about it. He got hooked on them, and Peter, it's good to have you in.
It's good to be in, Drew.
Two things. One, for those who are saying, well, what's a Hallmark Christmas movie? I think it's a whole channel dedicated to them, but fill us in on what they are, and you got to tell me your story. I can see how you get sucked in. I watched a couple of them, I'll confess, all right, more than just one. But tell me your story.
Yeah, so what happened was I was talking to Mike Kendall, who's the head of our programming here at Relevant Radio, and I was just going on and on about Hallmark movies, and he said, "Oh wow, you really need to talk to Drew about this," because I have a deep love of Hallmark movie channels and Hallmark Christmas movies. And the way that I got sucked into them is my wife is Puerto Rican, and I was visiting her family in Puerto Rico. A couple of years ago, we weren't married yet, and I was visiting there. I don't speak Spanish fluently yet. I'm gonna learn. I tell my in-laws, and so I was there, and I all the in-laws were around, and I wasn't able to carry on too much of a conversation, and so I ended up on the couch with a drink in my hand, watching for the very first time in my life. It took until I was like 28, for the very first time in my life, started watching Hallmark movies. and Hallmark Christmas movies. And I checked my watch and I found out that I had been sitting there for like 2, 3, 4, 5 hours straight watching these things.
I love it.
Now, I was raised, you know, reading C.S. Lewis and Aristotle and like, you know, watching, you know, Renaissance painters and going to museums. And I grew up in Washington, D.C. with sort of a very high sense of culture and sure. art and high standards and so on and so forth.
Your father's a professor in England, right?
Well, he's a theologian at the JP2 Institute. Yeah, and so I grew up in this world. And so to me, the Hallmark Christmas movies are a revelation because they are so bad. I know you love them, Drew, but for me, they're so bad that it is like going on a junk food eating binge and you can just enjoy them for an entire day and then never think about them again. But they're so bad. You can watch five, 10 of them.
And I agree with you. I'm not I don't just go home and say, honey, let's turn on the Hallmark Channel and watch
some cinema. Yeah, real cinema.
I want to be cultured tonight.
I want
to get into something very deep.
Scorsese would not direct one of these.
You know, Maggie calls them Christmas crack.
Right.
That's what she calls
them.
They feel good. I mean, they're not bad.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that is the essence of them. Feel good. So I looked up some numbers. The Hallmark Channel, right, which is a whole channel the rest of the year, they have this Countdown to Christmas series that they've been doing for over a decade. And a couple of years ago, the numbers that they were looking at were 85 million people watching Hallmark just during the holiday season.
Wow.
And those 85 million bring in year-round about $390 million in ad revenue, which is why I'm pitching Father Rocky on the fact that we need to do a Christmas movie, but that's a conversation for another time. $390 million in ad revenue for the Hallmark Christmas channel movies. And it only costs about $2 million to produce, which is unbelievably cheap in terms of a movie. Most movies, like HBO, will spend $10 million or $15 million on an episode of a TV show. Netflix will spend about $8 million per episode of Stranger Things, $10 million per episode of The Crown. Hallmark will spend just $2 million.
Wow.
And so when you're watching these things, the acting is not great. The cinematography is not great. The sound isn't great. And you can just enjoy the spectacle of bad storytelling with always over-enthusiastic characters, and it always works out in the end. It's just sheer delight. It is sheer delight.
I love it. The problem, I have Lifetime. I think it was this year or maybe last year they might have said that. They said four of their movies, I think it's this year that I heard this, are going to feature LGBTQ couples in very prominent roles. And as a result of that, you know, that turns off a lot of people.
This is the thing. Hallmark movies are... they don't present anything out of the ordinary in terms of the culture. They're like dead sticks floating in the stream of our culture, going along with every ripple, which is why they're fun to watch. And obviously they're gonna tie themselves to whatever trend the culture is throwing their way. So if they're, you know, throwing LGBTQ couples, thruples, quadruples, whatever, Hallmark will be right there to just be an echo of whatever the culture is.
You know, we were talking just before we went live on the air here with you, and I want to hear some of your worst picks.
I
want to go through those, and people can join us. You can share yours as well, 888-914-9149. But there was a story my wife was telling me about. There's an actress named Candace Cameron, and she was kind of like the queen of these Hallmark movies for a long time. Christian girl, right? Very dedicated to her faith. And when Hallmark went woke, when they started saying, hey, we're going to have these LGBTQ characters and these scenes, she said, she didn't say anything to them. She just decided to remove herself from there. She ended up starting, Maggie, do you know the name of the new network? Is it the Great American Stories Network or something along those lines, I think is what it was. And and Candace, if you're listening, you're welcome on the show. I'd love to promote your network, and I'd love to hear your story as to why you left. So if somebody knows her, tell her to get in touch with our producers. We'll put her on here. I think it's a great story because she didn't say, oh, I'm not doing this because, you know, you're having gay couples. American Family, Maggie saying, American Family Network. But she did what was right, started her own network, and I think people will go and follow. I think there's a need for it. There's so much darkness out there. that having something that
totally
you know, feels good is
so
actually good.
I'll rag on the Hallmark Christmas channel all day long, but they're super fun. Yep. They're very lighthearted. And so the fact that Cameron is going on and creating a version of that yep. is not going to flout Christian or moral right. teaching is awesome. I mean, I'm obviously a fan of that. And I think there is a need. I mean, we get together in Christmas. We're trying to enjoy time with family and yeah. friends. We're trying to worship God and to have something light that we can just put on. And if someone interrupts us in the middle of it, we can just get up and leave That's because so the storyline is about as thick as a sheet of paper. So I think it's super fun. I love that in the universes that these movies create, there are jobs like professional Christmas decorators and Christmas cookie testers and like all these things that are obviously insane.
Yes.
But in the world, and then, you know, I think the woman that you mentioned, Cameron Candace, you said
yeah,
was?
Yeah, Candace Cameron.
Candace Cameron.
Is that her name, Maggie? I think it is Candace Cameron.
She has been in probably 5, 10, a dozen yeah. of these movies because they'll use the same actors mm-hmm. from movie to movie. So it'll exactly. be the same rotation of women falling in love with the same rotation of men. And it's always the guy at the country home who's really close to his family and the really professional woman
right.
who's bitter and she's engaged to this guy who's super successful, but she's not really in love with him. Mm-hmm. And then she travels home for some family emergency and meets this guy at the local coffee shop who likes, you know, knit sweaters and and cappuccinos, and he's really close to his mom, and all it's just so many cliches. It's so much fun. I genuinely love it.
My guest is Peter Atkinson. You can join us too. If you want to get in, why don't you give us a ring right now? 888-914-9149. Feel free to sound off or share your favorite or worse Hallmark movie or Christmas movie. Peter, let me take an early break here. When we come back, I want you to take us through your list. How many do you have? You have a number
I have 10 or so. Yeah.
And these are what, the absolute?
These are the most ridiculous and terrible Hallmark movies featuring things that just don't make sense. And they're super fun.
Because you know the other thing that, and before we go to break, my wife points this out. My wife loves interior design and she's got a great yeah. eye, right? If you look at these Hallmark movies, I mean, every scene has, when it comes to these Christmas movies, every mantle, every light, every Christmas tree, every light post outside, it's all decorated. It's got yep. lights and garlands and wreaths. And
if you have an eye for detail, you'll notice that a lot of the movies use the exact same sets, too. I mean, because they pump these out. They produce about 40 of these a year.
Wow.
Which is just insane. Ridiculous.
That is.
It's amazing.
That's
it's
crazy. Amazing. All right, we'll take a short break. We'll take your calls on the other side. Peter will take us through his list. Feel free to get in. 888-914-9149. We'll be right back.
The Drew Mariani Show. Connected.
Connected.
Relevant Radio.
We receive hundreds of your phone calls every day, all thanks to the Catholic Order of Foresters studio line. Our sponsor offers flexible life insurance and annuities. Visit relevantradio.com/Forester today. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Melikilikimaka is a thing to say on a bright Hawaiian Christmas day.
That's well, thanks for joining me. It's good to be here with you today. A little more Christmas music to get you in the spirit. If you're just tuning in, joined by my colleague from the Merry Beggars, Peter Atkinson is here and taking a look at, we're talking Hallmark movies, believe it or not. Some of the good ones, and Peter's got a list of ones that he just does not like. You can check Peter out at relevantradio.com. We put a big plug in for you here, too. You got a couple things coming up. We got, Christmas Live people can check out. You've got On the Night Train. We've got A Christmas Carol, which is a classic. I love that. And next year, you got the upcoming Saints program.
Right? Yeah, that's right. So, you know, we're trying, our mission is to supplant the Hallmark Christmas channel. So we're putting out A Christmas Live. You can watch our live performance. You can you can listen to A Christmas Carol. Yeah. We've got a few years to try and get, you know, try and beat them at their own game. But we're getting a good start.
Well, if anybody can do it, Peter, it's you. Let's take a few phone calls. Sharon disagrees with you. I always love that. Sharon, good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi, Sharon.
Hi. I do disagree with most of what you say. For one thing, there are some very good Hallmark movies out there with good dialogue and great acting. There are mediocre movies, and then there are some really crummy ones that, you know, they're kind of corny, and I usually don't watch.
So take that, Peter.
I know. Well, I will admit to being a neophyte in the Hallmark Christmas universe. So if you can recommend any of the excellent ones, I will watch them with joy and disbelief.
Okay. Let me give you some names.
All right.
Switched for Christmas, and that is with Cameron Bure. Next Stop Christmas, that's a very good one. Time for Them to Come Home for Christmas. That's very touching. Christmas Bedtime Stories. Noel Next Door.
You see, you have all the names, Sharon. This is amazing.
Sharon, you must watch a lot of Hallmark movies, or you work for Hallmark. One or the other.
Yeah. Well, I'm actually retired, and my husband's been working a lot. And for some reason this season, I just turn them on when I need a break from, you know, Christmas shopping.
Well, good stuff.
I found some really good ones out there.
I love it.
Hey, Sharon, thanks for the call. Merry Christmas here. I'm grateful for sharing that. And I know a lot of people probably agree with you. I love the Hallmark movie. I can hear a lot of people saying it. They are. I say some of the movies are really feel good. Peter, let me grab another call, then I want to talk about your list. Christina is in Austin, Texas. She was an avid Hallmark movie watcher until something happened on the channel and she decided to change. Hi, Christina. Good afternoon.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can. Go right ahead, Christina.
Okay. Hi. Yes, I used to be an avid Hallmark Christmas movie watcher and throughout the year, but I stopped watching them about 3 years ago.
And why was that?
Because they started having gay and lesbian couples getting married, and I just didn't want to be watching that.
Yeah, well, I don't blame you. Yeah, they went woke on you then, I get it. So did you have a chance to check out Candace Cameron's channel?
Yes, I sure did, and I love her movies. It's the Great American Family channel, and that's what I've been watching.
Well, that's great. Hey, Christina, thank you.
And can I ask Christina a question? How do you like the movies? Are they as good as the Hallmark movies?
Oh, I think they're better.
Oh, all right. There you go. Everyone just needs to tune into the new network.
There you go. You got a new channel, Peter.
That's right. Next year, I'll review the new Great American Family stories.
That's awesome. Hey, Christina, thank you. Merry Christmas to you, too, if we don't talk. Hey, Peter, take us through your list, too, because I know you say some of these are so extreme.
So, okay, my favorite thing about the Hallmark Christmas channels is, and this is, you know, not talking about the woke stuff. This is just talking about the sheer ridiculousness of the world. So I want you to imagine you walk into a movie theater and you see, you take a seat in front of a big movie screen and you're expecting to see this beautiful movie and you see the title come on and it says The Cabin. And the synopsis of this story is two single parent families with the same last name, McDougal, are assigned a cabin during Scotland's Macfest.
I love it.
Which is a festival that gathers families from around the world with names beginning with Mac, which is entirely made up, by the way. The writers sat down and said, you know what festival Scotland probably has? A MacDougal festival. And the director of this also, Hallmark gets amazing directors. The director of this also directed Leprechaun 4 in Space, which tells you the caliber of directors that Hallmark Christmas movies are dealing with. You know, next week they'll probably have Spielberg on there. So that's sort of just like a sample of sort of the caliber of film. Another one is The Town Christmas Forgot, where a middle class family gets stranded in a town called Nowhere Town, which is actually the name that the writers gave this town. Nowhere Town is the name of the town. And then they spend the remainder of the movie bringing positivity to the town residents who are presumably depressed because their town has a ridiculous name. Another is Love's Unnerving Christmas Promise, which is set in one of my favorite periods, the Victorian period. So on the frontier in the 1890s, a mail order bride, i.e. a bride that someone has ordered via the postal service, must convince her new husband that she has come to love him. And unlike everybody else in their town, she is not put off by his one bulgy eye.
You couldn't even get that out.
That's it. That's the entire plot.
You couldn't even get it
out. Well, I mean, I want to be in the writer's room where they say, you know what? You know what really exemplifies the Christmas spirit? an entire town being repulsed by one guy's bulgy eye and a mail order bride.
Yeah, how do you pitch that?
That's, I don't know, but I'm sold. Another is A Snow White Christmas, which is a modern retelling of Snow White, where an evil stepmom doesn't like the man that her daughter's falling in love with. So she casts a spell and her daughter wakes up in a motel room and befriends a jazz group who are apparently the stand-ins for the Seven Dwarves. So this is classic Hallmark, right? You sort of set it up in a slick commercial area. You have the motel, the woman sort of in distress or out of place, and now you have a jazz group as the Seven Dwarves. I mean, if this doesn't sell your audience on listening or watching Hallmark Christmas movies, I don't know what else I can do.
I love it. Maggie, what about you? Do you watch them at all?
I do watch them, shamelessly.
Oh, yeah. They're amazing.
My old roommate, Annie, and I, when we lived in Nashville, she actually wrote a bunch of Christmas songs that she was trying to shop to Hallmark to get placed in their movies. You know, you write something. Yeah, you write stuff that's kind of jingly and fun, and you know, so it never ended up working out. But
that is so
her songs are awesome. My mom texted me and she said my favorite Hallmark movies are Christmas Train. And Silent Night.
A Silent Night. There we go.
That sounds great.
More movies to watch. Almost as good as a movie that Hallmark released, which had the title A Very Merry Mix-Up, where a woman goes to visit her fiancé, right? You know, standard Christmas, going to visit her fiancé. She ends up going to the wrong house with an entirely different family and falls in love with their son. And for whatever reason, it takes a long time in the movie for her to realize anything's wrong.
What?
Which is amazing. I mean, if you want outrageous scenarios, go to Hallmark Christmas Channel.
Hey, Maggie, your mom, speaking of her, and hello, Mrs. Grushel, it's good to have you listening.
Uh-huh.
Send a shout out to her. She found out about Candace Cameron, right?
And she did.
Tell the story about the cable guy who came.
Yeah, well, we had done a segment a couple of weeks ago about how Candace Cameron Bure was going to the Great American Family Network. And... Mom told me later that day or the next day, she's like, you know, we heard about Candace and we called our cable provider and wanted to make sure that we have that channel. So she said she's speaking with the cable guy and he's like, I've never heard of this network. And he's like, I gotta even check that we have that. So he goes and looks it up and apparently they already had it in their cable package. And so she was like, look at there, I'm educating the cable guy too.
I love it. And it's great. Peter's grabbing another call for you. Suzette is listening in Mesa, Arizona. Suzette, hi, you're on with Peter Atkinson.
Hi, Drew.
Hey, Suzette.
Hi. My favorite, I'm a total Hallmark junkie. I only watch Hallmark and EWTN. I don't even know why I have cable.
Because you wouldn't be able to get either of them without it, I guess.
Right. So anyways, my favorite Hallmark movie is called Five More Minutes, and it was done in 2021, and it was inspired by Scotty McCree's song, Five More Minutes. A woman's Christmas wish is answered in unexpected ways when her late grandfather's journal turns up and reveals an untold romance. And not to give anything away, but her grandfather shows up, you know, because she only won five more minutes with him. And it gives me God pimples, you know. And then the other Hallmark movies I like are those real stories of... what are they called? A Christmas Miracle. They're based on true stories. Yeah, they're great. And then Drew, really quick,
yes,
I just wanted to let you know I met one of your good friends, Lisa Hendy. I went to a woman's retreat for a day at St. Tim's here in Mesa.
Well, she's great. I got to leave it right there, Suzette. I actually traveled with her. She does a wonderful job online. And send my regards if you bump into her. But I have less than a minute to go. Merry Christmas, Suzette, Lori, Michelle, John, everyone else on hold. My apologies to you. Peter, I'm going to give you the final thoughts. You got about a minute.
Well, I just got to say, you know, if you want some beautiful entertainment with low budgets and movies that you won't mind turning off in the middle and things to watch and laugh at with your family, After you finish listening to Relevant Radio, which how can you ever be done with that?
That's
but
right.
After you're listening to Relevant Radio, turn on the Hallmark Christmas channel and enjoy some laughs with family and friends. I know I will after I finish listening to the Merry Beggars of Christmas Carol. I know I will. So we'll see you there.
Peter, thanks. Always fun to talk with you. I love the look you gave. We'll have you back again.
So good to
really
be here.
Soon. Hey, I'm up against the clock out of time for the day. Until tomorrow. Remember, God loves you, and so do I. Have a great day.